thought I was going to be just doing stupid. Started walking, and then what I realized was there was this bridge.
A little blue bridge.
There.
A joint hearing of the House Veterans Division, the Senate Veterans Affairs and Military Affairs Policy and Finance Committee will come to order. Every meeting that we held in the Senate has always started out with the Pledge of Allegiance. So I'd like members of the committee along with members of the audience to join me. And from those from the Senate, we do the same thing here in the House. With the,
I was wondering.
Opening up our committee meetings with the pledge. And I think before we get into the informational hearing put on by the MDVA, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, let's just go around the table. I know, so we just introduce yourself and maybe what district you represent. And so that this is the first time we got together this year as the joint hearing. Again, this is an informational hearing. We're not going to be taking any testimony. We just want to see exactly what the process is if we are to add a veterans home here in Minnesota. So if we could just start to my left here and move it around.
Senator Bruce Anderson, Chair of the Veterans Military Affairs Policy Committee in the Senate, and I also represent basically Senate District 29, which is most of Wright County and just a little bit of Hennepin County in Rockford.
Dave Reisman, Committee Administrator for the Senate Veterans and Military Affairs Committee.
Priyanka Primo, Senate Counsel.
Sheila Lewis, Committee Legislative Assistant for the Senate.
Kevin Lundeen, Fiscal Analyst for the Committee.
Senator Mike Ogden, Red Wing, Goodyear County, Wabasha County, a little bit of Northern Winona County, a couple of cities in Dodge County, and I represent Senate District 21.
Senator Dan Hall from the Burnsville area.
Senator Jerry Newton, I represent Blaine, Coon Rapids, Spring Lake Park. I'm the DFL lead on the Senate Veterans Committee.
Senator Fong Her, I represent only one part of the St. Paul, which is East Side, St. Paul, and I don't have many city, but the multicultural of my district is even more challenging than driving an hour away to another city. So my district is 67. Thank you.
Senator Matt Little, I represent Lakeville, Farmington, and Southern Dakota County.
Senator Steve Swedzinski, Senate District 48, Eden Prairie, Minnetonka.
Right in the middle there. Okay, on that side.
Jackie Clinton, Senate UFL Research.
Andy Larson, Senate Republican Research.
And back over there.
Jim Gagman, DFL House Caucus Research.
Paul Rosenthal, I represent Bloomington, Eden Prairie, Edina, and a little bit of Minnetonka in the House, and I'm the DFL leader on the committee.
Rick Davis, District 20, Fillmore and Houston Counties.
Marion O'Neill, I represent 29B, which is Buffalo, Monticello, Maple Lake, half of the Senator Chair's district.
Representative John Poston, I represent District 9A, Southern Cass County, Todd, and Wadena County.
Dale Lyric, I represent District 10B, which is all of Aiken County and a big chunk of Crow Wing County, central Minnesota.
Ryan Cook, Republican Caucus Research.
Helen Roberts, House Fiscal Analyst.
Chuck Feeble, House Research.
Matt Bliss, I represent the Bemidji, Walker, Hackensack, Longville area.
Justin Coon, Committee Legislative Assistant for the House.
John Hulquist, House Veterans Affairs Division, Committee Administrator.
Fei Lee, represent District 59A in Minneapolis.
Lori Pryor, I am the southern part of Minnetonka and the northern part of Eden Prairie.
And State Representative Bob Detmer, 39A, which includes much of Washington County and Chisago County. And I chair the House Veterans Committee, the division, because our division falls under the State Government Finance Committee. And again, just I got a poll of the number of veterans that we have serving in the House and the Senate, and we have a total of 17 veterans that are serving in the House and Senate. So those that are a veteran, would you just raise your hand? Okay, thank you for your service. And we just had Representative Quad A. Would you introduce yourself?
Sure. Representative Erin May Quaid. I'm District 57A, which is Apple Valley in the northeast portion of Lakeville.
Mr. Chairman, Kay Wood, Senate District 10, Olive Aiken and Crowing County.
Okay, welcome. Welcome.
Well, the purpose of this hearing is to learn the process for getting approval from the Federal Department of Veterans Affairs for a new veterans home or homes. That there's three of them that have made a initial request here to the state. So,
and in the past committee meetings, we've also heard from, we've had testimony from different communities, the Fillmore County, Bemidji, Montevideo. I've seen their proposals for veterans homes and want to thank them for their work and their efforts. And if we could have maybe one person from each area just stand up and recognize your group. And speak up so we can hear you.
Mayor Barbie from Montevideo.
Welcome.
Mayor G. Bornoff.
That's a good rank to have. You know.
Scotty Allison, County Veteran Service Officer from Bemidji, Minnesota, retired Army.
Okay. Sir?
I'm Andrew Peters, American Legion Commander, Wabasha County.
Okay. And I also would like to recognize Representative Bliss and also Representative Tim Miller. Miller is up there. Bliss, right here. As carrying the legislation for, and also Chair Davids for carrying legislation, and Matt Grasso too. Is Matt Grasso here? Okay. And sir, yes.
Bill Rowley from Spring Valley, co-chair.
Okay.
Dave Foster.
Okay. Welcome. Welcome.
Our plan today is we will not be taking public testimony in advocacy of these new veterans' homes at this hearing, so it will be just an informational hearing, and we'll be hearing from those who are doing the presentation.
And if the legislature approves the money in the capital investment or bonding bill for one or more veterans' homes, there will be a process and in terms of prioritizing of the requests required by the federal government.
I have one extra member of our committee that just showed if he would introduce himself and a little bit about his background and where he represents.
My name is Senator Andrew Lang. I represent District 17, which consists of just four counties, the rather large counties. This is my second session. I'm still a freshman by some definition of the word, but I have a military background. 17 years at Minnesota Army National Guard. I have some strong ties in the National Guard still, so.
Don't you fly some things?
I do.
Okay.
I do, yeah. That's, so everybody in the military has a job, and that's my job. I get to, they allow me to fly their helicopters, so.
Okay. Thank you for your service.
Thank you. Here today to present, to us the process is, Ben Johnson from the Legislative, Legislative Relations Director at the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs.
And Mr. Johnson, welcome to the committee, joint committee that we have today. Please begin with when you're ready. And again, welcome. I know you've appeared before both committees many times, and thank you for coming today.
Thank you, Chair Detmer, Chair Anderson, members of both committees. I appreciate your presence today. I'd also like to recognize those from the communities in greater Minnesota who have made the trip in to show their support for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs and Veterans Homes. I'd also like to acknowledge all the hats I see in the audience. Thank you. Thank you for coming today. I appreciate it. As I said, my name is Ben Johnson. I'm the Legislative Director for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. And what I'd like to do today is go through both a roadmap for attaining new veterans' homes in the state of Minnesota, as well as an overview of the existing status of veterans and veterans' homes in the state of Minnesota. I will be testifying if there are questions that I can't answer. I've brought some additional members of my organization to present some specific responses as needed. Otherwise, I can take questions either during the process or at the end. So Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs is dedicated to serving Minnesota veterans and their families. We do that by providing proven and innovative programs and services to maximize quality of life, including our 5 veterans homes, 4 skilled nursing, and 1 standalone domiciliary. We also have programs and services, which includes 4 major program areas some of you might be familiar with, our education and employment team, and the other organization, other parts of the organization, as well as the veterans cemeteries. We partner with the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, veteran service organizations, county veteran service officers, nonprofits, and private organizations to attain the services and benefits that our veterans have earned. Current numbers in Minnesota are approximately 328,000 veterans. That is a number that is gleaned from census data and the VA. That is not a head count. I'd like to point out that there is no actual specific count of veterans in the state of Minnesota. It is an analysis based on known discharges, but we don't have names and serial numbers of all veterans in the state. So all numbers going forward are estimates based on those federal numbers and analysis from the VA and the U.S. Census. Currently, about 93% of our veterans are male, 7% are female. It's expected that in the next 15 years, the number of female veterans is expected to double to close to 14%. This 328,000 veterans represents approximately 6% of the state's population. However, 21% of those age 65 and older in the state of Minnesota are veterans. Further breakdown of our veterans population, you'll note that the largest percentage of our veterans are Vietnam-era veterans, those who served between 1965 and 1975, which coincides with the age group of those who would be receiving care in retirement homes, veterans homes, and the like. They make up approximately 35% of our population of veterans. It's another graphic to identify those age 65 and older. These are veterans population in the state. Those in the 45 to 64 range will be the long-term residents of our current state veterans homes and any new veterans homes. And those in that last group, the 17 to 44-year-olds like me, won't need a veterans home for a very long time, but I expect we'll still be here serving veterans 40 years down the road. This is a breakdown of the veterans population and projected going forward to 2045. This is important to illustrate that veterans are reducing in number in the state of Minnesota. The total goes from approximately 328,000 now to an estimate of 148,000 in 2045. But you'll note that those age 65 and older, although they do diminish the statewide count, even at 2045, there are still 65,000 veterans age 65 and older who would be utilizing these, the existing homes and any potential new homes. This is a breakdown by region of those age 65 and older currently in the state of Minnesota. I'll note that this is from the regions are based on deeds, breakdown of the state, and we wanted to use established breakdowns of regions in something that was familiar to people looking at how the state is broken down. So the graphic is from deed, but the numbers are ours. A grand total of 175,000 age 65 and older in Minnesota right now. You'll note that the largest portion of those veterans currently live in the 7-county metro area. It is estimated that they will continue to be the largest portion going forward, followed by the Northwest region, which is currently served by our home in Fergus Falls. The Central region can access Fergus Falls, Silver Bay, and Minneapolis. Southeastern Minnesota, following that, currently not served by any of our existing homes, though they can access Hastings and Minneapolis. And Northeast and Southwestern Minnesota, rounded out, both served by veterans homes that exist in Silver Bay, Northeastern Minnesota, and Laverne in Southwestern Minnesota. An overview of the state veterans homes program, the federal program, but it's established by, homes are established by the state to serve veterans disabled by age, disease, or otherwise. who are unable to complete all of the necessary activities of daily living. Those are for our skilled nursing facilities. Also of note that when a state accepts VA construction grant assistance, at least 75% of any beds built must be occupied by veterans. Now, this is unique in Minnesota. We serve veterans, their spouses, as well as Gold Star mothers and fathers. Those are the eligibility, and that is a decision that the state of Minnesota has made, that we're not going to limit our service to only veterans or even only service-connected veterans, but veterans, their spouses, and Gold Star parents. Further breakdown of the types of care we currently provide. Minneapolis, Silver Bay.
Mr. Johnson, we have a question here. Representative Bliss.
Mr. Johnson, I noticed in the Northwest region, you said that that was served by the Fergus Falls facility. How far is it from Fergus Falls to the border cities of International Falls, Roseau? Do you have that information?
Chair Detmer, Representative, I don't have the distance from Fergus to those border cities, sir.
Representative Bliss? But you have that information.
It's about 4.5 or 5 hours to the borders from those cities, from Fergus Falls.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Please proceed.
Thank you. So currently, Minneapolis, Silver Bay, Fergus Falls, and Laverne provide skilled nursing beds. These are ongoing skilled care and medical services for veterans, spouses, and Gold Star parents, individuals who can't live independently. We also have domiciliary care at Hastings. We've got 200 beds of domiciliary care at Hastings and another 50 at the Minneapolis campus. These are intended to be transitional beds. It's not intended to be a long-term accommodation. It is intended to provide the opportunity for veterans to receive some care and assistance and then return to the community. The least restrictive level of care that they can have. Also unique to Minnesota is one of two in the nation is the adult day center at Minneapolis. This is a therapeutic health care services, meals, bathing, and the like, provided to non-residents of the Minneapolis home, but individuals, veterans who come in, receive these services, and it's also an opportunity to provide respite to those veteran spouses to be able to take care of their own needs as well. So it's an opportunity to get veterans into a setting that isn't their home for those who need some assistance but aren't residents yet. Again, this is one of two in the nation catering to these veterans. We're very proud of the program, and they're always looking for opportunities to get more individuals to come into the Adult Day Center at Minneapolis. So here's a graphic indicating where in Minnesota those existing facilities lie. Representative Bliss, to your question, you'll notice Fergus Falls is not anywhere close to the northern border cities. And here's a breakdown of the existing beds in the state of Minnesota. 106 at Fergus Falls, 85 down in Laverne. Currently have 300 serving Minneapolis, 83 in Silver Bay, a total of 574 skilled nursing beds. And then the aforementioned Hastings and Minneapolis domiciliary beds are 250 total. For the purposes of the federal VA's count, domiciliary and skilled nursing beds count the same. So the total built in the state of Minnesota are 824. Notice in the bottom right-hand corner, federally designated beds, the number allocated to Minnesota is 1,058 total, which leaves us a balance of 234 beds.
Excuse me.
Yes, sir.
Could you share with the committee Mr. Johnson, how the federal government determines the number of beds that a state might have?
Certainly. The short answer is that they review the veterans' populations in each state and look at those with certain characteristics such as service-connected disabilities and then allocate on a state-by-state basis. I'll get a little bit more in-depth a little bit later, but the short answer is that. It's pure data.
Thank you.
For our existing homes, this is a breakdown of the expenditures. You'll notice that the largest at Minneapolis is also the most costly, serving 300 skilled nursing beds and 50 domiciliary beds. the annual expenditure is approximately $52 million. And then in subsequent stepping down in terms of the number of veterans served is Fergus Falls, Silver Bay, Laverne, and Hastings. That's for context. I want to show that the breakdown then for receipts, this is money coming in to pay for those expenditures, include the largest share of general fund appropriation to our agency annually for the healthcare side is $57 million, followed by $30.7 million from federal per diem reimbursements. These are based on disability status. $16 million coming in from resident maintenance charges $1.8 million coming in federal Medicare reimbursements. So the previous slide and this slide will give you a sense of expenditures and receipts, and we've been able to utilize that to estimate going forward what a new facility would cost the state of Minnesota and what we could expect to receive from the federal government in terms of reimbursements. A little more detail on those numbers. The resident maintenance charge is the resident's portion of the full cost of care. It's determined by their ability to pay based on their assets, income, and expenses. However, if a potential resident has no assets, income, or expenses, expenses exceed those assets and incomes, we do not turn them away. If they're eligible and have been offered a position but they can't afford to pay, that is where a portion of that state's general fund contribution goes. The federal VA per diem, you might have heard about per diems, is a daily rate established by the VA which reimburses veterans' homes based on disability levels. The full per diem is for those with 70% or greater service-connected disability, and a regular per diem, which is a smaller amount for those less than 70% or non-service-connected disability. So, for instance, the state of Minnesota has long supported the idea of veteran spouses being eligible to be residents, but we do not receive any VA reimbursements for the spouses unless they're service-connected to have their own disability.
Mr. Johnson,
yes, sir.
Do you have a number of veterans that don't have the ability to pay that for their time?
We haven't. Chair Detmer, we could get that information
okay.
for you.
Thank you. Thank you.
So next up is an overview of the actual home construction. I hope you have some good information based on context for what's currently existing and how we operate. Move into the bed count, an overview of that, construction grants, construction costs, and our operational assessment. So the VA prescribes for each state the number of home and domiciliary beds which grants may be furnished. Again, as I mentioned, this is based on a state-by-state assessment of need in terms of veterans with certain levels of disability. The maximum number of beds available for Minnesota is 1,058. You'll note that this is based on 2020 projections. After 2020, they will do another assessment and will likely adjust that number from 1,058. To preempt any questions in that regard, we have been... We have noticed a decrease in veterans and an increase in states in the Sun Belt, including Florida, Texas, and Arizona. Those places are increasing in their veterans, their aging veterans populations. But we have no concrete information about what any new assessment would be for the state of Minnesota. Between now and when that new number comes out, if it comes out, 1,058 is what we're operating under.
Representative Pryor has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mm-hmm. So what happens if 2020, if the number of beds we're allowed actually goes down in Minnesota? If we had built the beds, does that mean that they're not going to qualify, or once they're in place, you know, they would continue to qualify?
Mr. Johnson?
Chair Detmer, Representative, thank you for the question. Our assessment is that we would be grandfathered. Any applications for new construction would be considered under the existing limit, and that's our assessment.
Reverend Pryor?
Thank you.
Okay.
So as previously noted, our current bed availability between what is currently built out and what our limit is 234 beds. This is important. You'll note in a later slide, in terms of need, the VA assesses need in prioritizing new projects. And 234 beds, although it seems like an opportunity in the state of Minnesota and is an opportunity in the state of Minnesota, it is much less than a lot of other states. We've done a good job of building out and maintaining existing homes based on the numbers of veterans that we can serve. There are some other states with significant needs, and I'll get to that in a moment here. In terms of construction grants, the VA allocates a 65% match to projects that meet their criteria and are selected based on priorities and available funding. The 35% state match is how you get into the top priority list. A state may apply for federal grants for construction without state funding. However, it's unlikely that any projects that don't have state support would be funded at the federal level.
And that's an important thing that we need to be thinking about here when it comes to our bonding. Good point.
So to Chair Detmer's point, demand for the grant funds at the federal level exceeds the available funding. The current budget indicates approximately $110 million for state construction grants from the federal VA. We've seen anywhere from $85 to $95 million in previous years. But because of that limited amount of funding, the VA maintains this rolling priority list. Once an application is submitted, it is on the list, and that list is then updated annually. However, this is not a static list. If you apply now, you can't count the number of years between when you've applied and when you'll get the money. Every year, each application is reassessed and then listed in this priority list, which is released generally the first week of January in any given year. It's not something that the VA publicizes necessarily. I haven't yet received this year's priority list for fiscal year 18, but I have requested a copy of it.
Mr. Johnson, do you have an idea how many requests are probably out there as of last year? Mr. Johnson?
I do. Chair Detmer, as of last year, the number on the list was, it was just over 70 applications, I believe. I do know that priority group 1, between 1 and 1.7, had over $600 million worth of requests. So.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Johnson? Senator Newton?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And on that list, we still have Montevideo and Bemidji and Brainerd, I think, were already on the list. Their applications are in, right?
Mr. Johnson.
Senator Newton, actually, we 2 years ago, we withdrew applications that did not have legislative funding. So the only items still on the federal list are unfunded for things like tuck pointing at Minneapolis. And I believe there was a roof replacement, but those are things that we've been able to accomplish through bonding with the support of the legislature and the governor. So there are no current applications pending for the state of Minnesota for new homes.
Yep. Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And also, just to understand this better, you have to have matching state funds to be a priority from the federal government. And then of those priorities, priority ones, are all of them funded, or still only a portion of those are being funded?
Mr. Johnson.
Representative, that's a good question. You don't have to have state money to get onto the priority list between priority one and priority group eight. However, those without state funding likely don't get into the top priority and won't receive funding at the federal level. In terms of those on the list, they fund as many as they have available, as many as they have dollars available to fund. I believe in fiscal year 2016, those approved were, I think, maybe 16 different projects at about $48 million worth of federal appropriations, and most of those went to repair for health and safety issues. Priority group 1.1 is the highest priority, and that is for repairs and rehabilitation for buildings that is a health and safety priority. I believe they only funded one new veterans home in the state of Texas in fiscal year 2016. Most of the money went to repair and betterment for health and safety issues, things like that.
Representative Pryor.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So to further illustrate Representative Prior's question, VA Priority Group 1, which is the highest priority, is further broken down into 1.1 to 1.7. So 1.1 are those repairs requested from states looking for things like life and safety deficiencies. 1.2, those states that have not previously applied for grants for state veterans' homes. Thinking back to that 234 number for the state of Minnesota, 1.3 are those projects with the greatest need, those projects for states with the greatest need, an unmet need of 2,000 or more, which means they've got a significant amount appropriated from the federal VA, and have more than 2,000 beds available to be built out. Item 1.4 is renovation other than those for life and safety deficiencies. 1.5, significant need, those for a state with 1,000 to 1,999 beds available. 1.6 is non-compliant projects, and where Minnesota would fall for any new construction would be priority group 1.7. This is a limited need because we have been successful in building out, and we have only 234 in this unmet need, which is where any projects from the state of Minnesota would then fall.
Mr. Johnson, when you say unmet needs, that's the number of beds that they assigned to us, 234 beds, not necessarily the unmet needs of the number of veterans that we have waiting in the list to get into a veterans home. Am I correct?
Chair Demmer, that's correct. This is in terms of beds currently constructed, not veterans in the state.
Okay.
That's good. Thank you. So looking forward, I've got an idea that if there were an appropriation made this year in the bonding bill for one or all of the one or all of the proposed projects in the state of Minnesota, a bonding bill likely wouldn't be signed. The deadline for the initial applications in any given year is April 15th, so we're about a week and a half out from the federal deadline to get an application submitted. Unless you guys know something I don't know about the capital investment bill, I think that it's safe to say that the initial application would be due April 15th of next year. Then you have the summer to submit supplemental materials. So from April 15th until August 1st of next year, you could submit some supplemental application materials to bolster your application or fill out any things that weren't completed with that initial. The priority list is then released the following January. And final project submissions are due June. In this case, it would be June 15th of 2020. Federal VA signs grants September of that year and requires construction be complete within 5 years of receiving the grant funds. So in this case, construction would need to be completed by September 30th, 2025.
Mr. Johnson.
Yes, sir.
The chairman for the Senate Bonding Committee is right behind you. I was just going to ask Senator Senjum. He has an application ready to go in by April 15th.
Chair, we could.
Thank you, Senator Senjum.
And if Representative Udall was here, I would ask him the same question. So, please ask the question. Make way.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm having a presentation here that you gave to the Veterans Committee a while back, last session, and so I'm looking at the demand that goes 2017, 2020, 2025. So if we do this timeline and it's done by 2025, it looks like the demand goes from 224 to 182. Would you be building with the 224 in mind from when we applied, or would it be to the 2025 need from when it's finished?
Mr. Johnson?
Chair Detmer, I'm sorry, I'm not sure I understand. The 224, is that a number of beds, or is that 224,000 veterans?
That's a make way.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it's the demand, total demand for beds. So I had it, you gave us a sheet that said 224 in 2017, 204 in 2020, 182 in 2025.
What page is that?
It was a presentation that was given to our committee last session. I just saved it because extra information.
Okay.
Chair Demmer, Representative, I apologize. I can't recall what that's referring to. I'm happy to look at it and get an answer to the committee as well.
Representative McQuay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think that a better way to just ask the question is, if we submit our application next year, would we be building the beds that we have the demand for the year we submit it or the year that the project will be completed?
Representative Johnson.
Chair Detmer, Representative, the demand stays the same in terms of long-term need for aging veterans. And until new beds are constructed, the 234 that exist, the 234 beds that we can build out, that is static until the construction is complete. However, I would note that those we count those beds and the federal VA counts those beds while they're in construction. So we can't submit applications for 300 beds. We're limited to the amount that we are able to build out. So we can't go beyond that amount.
Yeah, and committee members, if we were to build three, we could build under the current 234. We could build three veterans' homes. That would be 216 beds. If we each home was 72 beds, approximately.
Chair Detmer, that's correct. And to be frank, the 72 bed facility, that model that the communities are putting together in their bonding requests. Is a model that we're comfortable with. It allows for four wings of 18 beds. It's the best in terms of staffing for the agency. It's the best in terms of delivering the highest quality care to the residents, and it allows us to operate. It's a model that Wisconsin has used that we find really compelling. So I appreciate the communities amending their initial requests and the submissions because that is something that we feel we could definitely staff and operate. So an additional, this is a visual a breakdown of the slide that we just went over, and you can see initial applications for fiscal year 2019, next April, going through 2025. Assuming a selection in the next fiscal year, however, I will note that, again, applications, they do stay on the list until they're either funded or request for removal. But the amount that you submit is what you is locked in then. So there's no amending it to ask for more. If it's on the list for 6 years and construction costs increase, the number is static. The amount for the construction is static. We'll get into that a little bit more here.
Question to that. So if we did send a request with capital investment money, and say the following year we would decide we want to add more money to that, can the state do that?
Chair, no.
Okay.
So required materials for the federal grants is documentation that there's a reasonable basis to conclude that the facility, when it's complete, will be fully occupied. That means that there are sufficient veterans to fill the need in that home when it's constructed. And I'll note that all of the proposals that currently exist do meet that basic criteria, that there will be sufficient veterans both now and at the time of completion to fill a veterans home with residents. State authorization for the project and certificate of state matching funds, these are important. In order to be considered for the priority group one, the state needs to authorize the application and certify with the copy of the legislation or an operating budget that the state will support that new home. I do want to add some clarification. So the five-year capital plan is operational costs for all of the veterans' homes that exist, including any new construction. So if we did build three more, then it would be the five existing facilities plus the three new ones. We would have to have a five-year capital plan. The state is agreeing that they will operate those. And a point of clarification and actually a correction. I've said in this committee and to legislators and staffers in the past that our understanding was that you needed to fund the operational cost. There needed to be an appropriation in order for an application to be considered. I was incorrect. I was able to finally speak with the director at the VA's state grant, state homes grant program, who confirmed to me that an operational plan is sufficient. The state does not need to appropriate operational dollars, which is a major correction, and I said rather blithely at one point I would be happy to admit my mistake in that regard if it means that the state can support it. So the state does not need to allocate money to operate these in the current year. It only needs to commit to operating them and funding the operations when it is completed. So.
Well, Mr. Johnson, that was the first mistake I've heard you make. But that would have been a big one. Okay. But thank you. Thank you for bringing that to our attention.
Only a couple more slides to go, and these are likely to raise the most eyebrows. I've seen the proposals from Greater Minnesota as well as the one from Minneapolis talking about new construction costs. I may call on Mike Jander, who's our facilities manager, to talk a little bit more about how this was developed. But in looking at the construction cost for a 72-bed facility, and this estimate, I note, is for the midpoint of construction. If construction happened, funding came in 2023, we look at about an 18 to 24-month construction period. So midpoint of construction would be 2024. Our estimate is that a new facility would be $62.5 million. The state would be obligated at 35% or just under $22 million. And the application for the federal VA would be at $40.7 million. And this is for construction costs. Again, this does not include pre-design and design costs, which we estimate at approximately $3 million. Does not include land acquisition, site abatement, site demo. It assumes clean land. It assumes that there's something that is ready to build and that there is infrastructure available. The presentations and proposals we've seen from Greater Minnesota include acknowledgement of some of those costs and have accommodated some of those requirements, but MDVA, the Minnesota Department of Administration, and MMB have not seen these sites, have not done anything beyond analyzing what has been submitted from these communities. I will note that this number is developed in concert with a large contractor, which is J.E. Dunn, as well as the expertise of admin, and looking at our construction at the Minneapolis campus, Building 22 being the most recent. I'd like to point out the last bullet there is construction cost escalation. This also is reflective of why the numbers have increased from the last time that we talked about the cost for construction. The industry indicates 1 to 1.5% per quarter, up to 6% per year of construction cost escalation. There is a building boom. The economy is doing well. And construction companies for new construction of a veteran's home, they are in high demand for other sectors in the economy as well. So we've tried to be as reasonable as possible. And to your question from earlier, Chair Detmer, the number that goes in the application is the number that is set. So we've tried to take into account what we expect it would cost in 2024 for this construction to actually occur.
And a question on that, Mr. Johnson. Maybe you already answered that, but what's the amount that we need to have in the bonding request to send to the federal VA for it to be considered?
Chair, thank you for the question. It needs to total the 35%. How the state gets there can be a combination of local contributions, donations of the value of the land. It does not need to be a full-on bonding bill for the $21.9 million that we estimate. That being said, contributions, commitments from the community are important, but the state needs to be able to certify that that exists in order to submit the application. Another avenue, but one that I don't think my agency would recommend, is that the state could pay for it and then seek reimbursement for the 65%. Not as palatable, I assume, for the legislature or the governor, but that is an option. And then expenditures, this is based on our existing state veterans homes in Greater Minnesota. Expenditures equal approximately $10 million annually. Based on fiscal year expenditures, expected revenues then in terms of resident maintenance charges per diem and Medicare reimbursements would be about half of that. And so the remainder would have to be would come from the general fund, which is similar to how it's done now. You remember an earlier slide indicated about $57 million coming from the general fund. In this case, we expect about half of the cost of operations would come from the general fund. And I'll point out also that a new home that is constructed is not immediately receiving maintenance charges and per diem. It would need to be scaled up over a couple of months from opening date, and it would be operational costs would be incurred prior to the construction completion because we would want to be hiring staff and getting them trained up and then filling the new home with residents over the course of a couple of months. But Deputy Commissioner Hughes indicated to me that by about 4 to 6 months out, we would be then looking at sort of sustainability and more stability. So it would cost more on the front end for the operations, but then would fall into the approximately $5 million per year for operations. Keep in mind, this is for one 72-bed home. If we built three, obviously, I think that's tripled. And that's all I have prepared for you today. I'm happy to answer as many questions as I can. I hope that it isn't the first time you are seeing this information, and again, I'll be happy to follow up with any additional answers for things that I don't know or that my resources behind me don't have.
Doesn't make any sense. Representative Rosenthal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Johnson, obviously we want to take care of our veterans all over the state as well as we can, but can you tell me where the greatest need for people seeking care is?
Mr. Johnson?
Chair Detmer, Chair Rosenthal, thank you, Representative Rosenthal. That is the question. What are the criteria that the legislature and the governor are going to use to determine where the most need is at? Is it just the number of veterans age 65 and older seeking skilled nursing care? Then that's the seven-county metro area. Is it the community that has contributed the most in terms of the value of land and local contributions? Is it geographically, as Representative
Bliss
pointed out? I'm trying to think of the most polite way of describing the gotcha earlier was exactly right. Is it in terms of geographic area or in terms of aging veterans farthest away from an existing facility? You look at the southeastern Minnesota, Fillmore County, Spring Valley, and Preston, there's an opportunity. That part of the state is underserved as well and has a very large aging veterans population for their what they've described as a catchment area. So that is the key question. What is the criteria that's going to be used to decide which, if any, would receive state support? In terms of veterans population, the Seven County Metro has the largest aging veterans population in the state, and long term would be the most consistently in terms of need, and has consistently had the largest waiting list of any of the homes. So.
Representative Rosenthal?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Johnson, how long is the waiting list?
Chair Johnson? Representative, it can vary. For Minneapolis, it depends on both gender, and but I would say a year and a half is a good number, a year to a year and a half for a waiting list. The waiting list is a challenging item because we have both veterans who don't put themselves on the waiting list, believing that they won't ever get in. We also have veterans who are seeking it not for now, but anticipating a need, so they get themselves on the waiting list, not needing the skilled nursing care for another couple of years. So the waiting list is a little bit misleading, but it is important as well. So,
Representative Wilson.
So, thank you, Mr. Chair. Sorry. What is the number of people that are?
Mr. Johnson?
Chair Detmer, Representative, I'd like to bring in Deputy Commissioner Hughes. I think he's got a more accurate assessment of the waiting list than I do, if I may.
Deputy Commissioner, welcome. Please introduce yourself for the record.
I'm Deputy Commissioner for MDVA Healthcare, Douglas Hughes.
Okay. Welcome.
Thank you. Chair Detmer, Chair Anderson, and Representative Roosevelt, I'd like to answer that question. It's one of those, it depends on location. Minneapolis, if this winter we were hit fairly hard with the flu, so the waiting list went down. We're probably at about 9 months or so, maybe to a year, for Minneapolis for eligible veterans. Of course, that's different, as Mr. Johnson said. In the outstate, it's about 6 months to a little bit more. I ask that of our administrators. Sometimes it might go up to 9 months, like our administrator out in Laverne, Luke Schreiber's told me that the last time he estimated it to be 9 months for Laverne. The other thing that you really need to take into context is that if you don't have a veterans home, and if you do have a long waiting list, how many aren't applying because of those two variables? So I think that needs to be taken into account as well.
Representative Rosenthal. Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Johnson, this is going back to page 17 for the bed count overview. And is it correct that the estimate for the specific veterans demographics are from the census, you said?
Mr. Johnson.
with regard to the breakdown, the 1,058, is that your question, sir?
Mr. Johnson, just more of the count, the actual count of veterans that we have, so that when we're trying to get to the 1,058, we could get an accurate count.
Mr. Johnson?
Chair Dattmer, Representative, the number of veterans in the state of Minnesota is based on census data and VA estimates. Mm-hmm. The 1,058 is based on eligible veterans, veterans eligible for VA, for service-connected disabilities. So the two numbers sort of play off each other. But in terms of estimates for statewide veterans and where they live, that is also census data. It is based on estimates county by county. The challenge then with 1,058 is not necessarily developed county by county, but by area codes. So there is some overlap there. There are some parts of the state that are counted differently between the census and the veterans numbers and the number of beds available. But generally, they're working from the same type of information.
Definitely.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Johnson, so my concern here is I don't know if, because you mentioned that the 328,000 veterans, that's not a correct number. So is there, I don't know if you noticed, historically, have we, Minnesota, done a good job of capturing all the veterans that we have with regards to the census, or do you think that we need to do more to capture all of our veterans so that quite possibly maybe we could have our beds number increase for future census?
Sure.
Mr. Johnson?
Chair Dattmer, Representative. There is no good way of counting every veteran in the state. And the way that the demographics have been going for the state of Minnesota in terms of veterans suggests that even if we had an accurate count, a head count, and lined up everyone and counted them, that it would not make up the difference that some of the Sunbelt states are seeing in terms of adding veterans, both in terms of veterans recently separated as well as aging veterans who, for some unknown reason, might prefer the sun and warmth of Phoenix. But it is a challenge. Our assessment is based on discharge paperwork that we have access to, but there is no count of veterans. And quite frankly, I think if you asked every veteran to stand up and identify themselves, we would see some pushback. There's a lot of veterans who just have no interest in being counted in that way.
Representative Lee? Okay. Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To Mr. Johnson, what area of the state has more long-term care options per capita other than veterans' homes?
Mr. Johnson? Or Mr. Hughes?
Chair Dattmer, Chair Anderson, Representative Davies. I ran the VA's nursing home program for Minneapolis, and the options for whether it's you're eligible for a VA paid contract in a private home or not, the majority of long-term facilities are in the Twin City area.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions? I guess knowing that we only budget for a two-year cycle, this just came to me. How would we satisfy the requirements or the operational plan following construction? Mr. Johnson.
Chair Dattmer, to that question, it would be an estimate based on the known costs of operating our skilled nursing facilities in greater Minnesota. And satisfying the operational plan is simply a matter of putting to paper the known costs of a 72-bed facility. We estimate approximately 112 FTEs to operate a 72-bed facility. We know how much Laverne and Fergus Falls cost us to operate, and so we would be then extrapolating that and looking at hiring an administrator, hiring the head of nursing, adding the skilled nursing staff, adding the HSTs, working from a point 18 months in advance to construction and opening. So it's simply a matter of using what we know for our existing homes in greater Minnesota.
Okay. Representative Pryor?
Mr. Chair. A couple points I would like to clarify. And so, Deputy Commissioner, when you said that the list was down to
9 months or 900 people because of the flu season? Was that that?
It's a well known
Mr. Hughes
phenomena. So Representative Chair Detmer, Chair Anderson, Representative Pryor, it's a well-known fact that long-term care beds, if they are the long-term care versus the transitional care, they come available generally because of deaths.
Okay.
Okay.
So it's the
yes.
people in the facility
yes.
that, yeah, during the flu season.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you. Just to make sure I understood that.
Yeah.
And then, if I may, another question. So getting back to actually getting funding from being a high enough priority to receive federal funding, you said that there's only one facility in the country that was approved, a new facility that was approved, and that was in Texas. And was that then the 1.5 priority, or was it down where we would be at 1.7? priority, and would you know that?
Mr. Johnson?
Chair Detmer, Representative, I actually don't know where that facility fell. It was Texas.
I can't read it. I don't have my phone.
Convenient. So the new construction was in Richmond, Texas. It was a 120-bed facility. This is from the conditional approvals for fiscal year 16, the challenge is that this conditional approval list doesn't say where they had been previously prioritized. I could go back and get that information for you, but my understanding is that that Texas would have a much larger available bed than we do, and would likely be a higher priority then.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It probably would be useful information to also know how many projects are on that list that are not being funded of new projects.
Mr. Johnson?
Chair Detmer, Representative, from the fiscal year 17 list, there are new constructions starting at rank number 43 and running all the way through 57. And again, the amount outstanding that that is on the fiscal year 17 application list in priority group one alone was $640 million worth of projects. So 57 projects in priority group one. Most of these at the top are safety, emergency repairs, that and the like. There are some new constructions that are near the top of the list. Both of those are in Florida.
Johnson, a question. What if a community wanted to build and fully fund the construction? How would that happen with the federal VA?
Chair Detmer, in that case, the community could fund the new construction, and so long as it meets the care requirements that the federal VA puts out in terms of receiving per diems and reimbursements, they could simply fund it. We wouldn't be submitting an application for matching money from the state home construction program. It would just be an out-of-pocket for whichever community wanted to do that.
And that would basically, Mr. Johnson, that would be basically run through the local community and the state Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs? Or would they have to also submit anything to the federal VA?
If you wanted to seek federal reimbursement,
okay.
You could apply for that one time, but we would expect that they would partner with us in order to build to the specifications that we would need to operate it.
Right.
But if they wanted to self-fund a project like that, the community could do so, and then I guess it would be the same as any other construction request running through the capital investment process. If they wanted state funding, if it was all self-funded, then they would basically have to give.
So you say it could be a combination of state funding and local funding to build one. Okay.
Correct.
Gotcha. Okay. Yes. Representative, Senator Newton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Johnson, on the building that we're moving patients out of into at the Minneapolis facility and into the new facility, how much of that building could be used and CMS certified for veterans without having to go back to the VA for approval?
I'll defer to the Deputy Commissioner Hughes.
Yep. Mr. Hughes?
Chair Detmer, Chair Anderson, Senator Newton. Currently, that building, Building 6, it has now, it's unoccupied. We finished transition on Friday, so we moved all residents from 6 into 22. It is not, right at this current state, CMS eligible. I don't know how many have ever worked in long-term care, but sometimes it's much more costly to retrofit, especially things like sprinkler systems and other requirements, than it is to build a new facility. Beds in that facility could be used, but they would not be CMS certified. They would be as they were previous in Building 6.
Mr. Chair, just to follow up, Commissioner, if could that be used for domiciliary care as it is now?
Mr. Hughes, Chair Detmer, Senator Newton, in the last Senate hearing that we had, I presented a very light overview of what could be used for Building 6, and that was anywhere from additional beds, though not skilled, assisted living, which is a plan that I did a white paper for the governor for his meeting that he had in Washington, D.C., as well as a learning center that could be used by state and other educational institutions. But those are all preliminary ideas that we have.
Senator Newton?
Just to follow up, and domiciliary care, could that be included in that?
Chair Detmer, Senator Anderson, right now the situation with domiciliary care is that the numbers are going down. Right now in the 200 beds that we have in Hastings, we have 133. There's other areas that are, other niches that are taking those domiciliary beds, such as the Upper Post, Common Bond, Eagles Healing Nest, all of those. So it's in the past we were probably the only game in town, but now there's several others, and there's even a proposal to add on to Cochran House, which is on the Hastings property down there right now. So there's about a number of other options.
Thank you.
Okay.
If we could turn to page 6, Mr. Johnson, and maybe help us, you know, with all the deployment we've had the last, 15, 20 years and so forth with our National Guard and with our troops, according to this table here, we're going to have a decrease in number of veterans in Minnesota. Am I right?
Chair Detmer, that's correct. Yeah. The challenge facing Minnesota is that we don't have a very large active duty presence, and our Guard members who are deployed in order to gain veteran status have to be under federal orders. But even in that case, we are seeing more and more deployments by the same individuals, multiple deployments. So whereas the Vietnam era veterans, which we saw the largest number in the state of Minnesota, 35% of our veterans are Vietnam era, those were typically one or two, maybe three deployments in country. So the United States made a lot more veterans in previous conflicts. The way that it is going, it's the same serving in the military who are doing multiple deployments, so that the numbers are what you see in front of you, sir.
Yeah.
Any other questions, members? If not, Mr. Johnson, Mr. Hughes, we appreciate your presentation, and we'll take this information and digest it as we look forward to other presentations, and hopefully Senator Senjum and Representative Erdahl will come forward with some information.
And I would like to thank the Senate for coming over and spending this time with us. And like I always say, Minnesota, every day in Minnesota is a Veterans Day. This meeting is adjourned.